From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, a night of prophecy with John Hoag. Here's what's happening. A water ban that had hundreds of thousands of people in Ohio and Michigan scrambling for drinking water has now been lifted. Toledo Mayor Michael Collins lifted the ban at a Monday morning news conference, said the city's drinking water is safe. Not sure I'd try it. Ohio's fourth largest city warned residents not to use city water early Saturday after tests at one treatment plant showed readings for microcystin above the standard for consumption. Now, most likely from algae on the lake. The Ohio governor declared a state of emergency. Now, early Monday, Mayor Collins kept in place an advisory against drinking or using the water pending additional tests. At 3 a.m. at a news conference, he said that it was his decision to keep the advisory in place at least into the morning hours, even though latest test results suggest that the algae-induced toxin contaminating Lake Erie had probably dissipated to safe levels. The mayor said two tests had come back too close for comfort. And with that warning, worried residents told not to drink, brush their teeth, or wash dishes with the water. So what a mess it was. The Ohio National Guard was using water purification systems to try to produce some drinkable water for people. But the ban so far now has been lifted. In a moment, we'll discuss just how safe tap water really is. Ebola. The second American aid worker who contracted the deadly Ebola virus while helping to fight this disease in West Africa is expected to arrive in Atlanta tomorrow. Nancy Wrightbull, she's 59, will fly in a medical aircraft from Liberia to Atlanta to be treated by infectious disease specialists in a special isolation ward at Emory University Hospital. The specialists on Saturday began treating 33-year-old American doctor Kent Brantley, who also returned home after being stricken with Ebola during the emergency response to this worst outbreak on record of this virus, which has so far killed more than 700 people since just a few months ago. Will it or will it not hold? That's the question following word late Monday that Israel and Palestinian factions, including Hamas, have agreed to another humanitarian ceasefire, this one proposed by Egypt. Even as they agreed to the ceasefire set to take place right now, both sides appeared suspicious of one another. So a few trillion here, a few trillion there. And as soon you'll be talking about a devalued dollar and maybe a nation perpetually in debt. The total federal debt of the U.S. government has now increased more than $7 trillion during the slightly more than 5.5 years that President Barack Obama has been in office. Now, that is more than the debt increased under all U.S. presidents from George Washington through Bill Clinton combined, and it is more debt than was accumulated in the first 227 years of our nation's existence, from 1776 through 2003. My gosh. Catherine Austin Fitz, investment advisor, she's with us. Are we ever going to dig out of this hole, Catherine?
Well, the debt's gone from $10 to $17 trillion to $17.5 trillion during this last, during the Obama administration, George. Debt's rising all over the world. So, you know, if you look at debt as public debt as a percent of GDP in the United States, it's expected to be 74% by the end of the year. But if you look at Japan, it's 226%. Italy is 123%. France is 93%. The UK is 91%. So this is a global phenomenon. It's happening everywhere. And it's, of course, you know, it can't end well because obviously we can't carry this kind of debt, which is why I'm always saying we need to change to an equity model. Now, part of this comes back to Coast and why I'm so appreciative of your efforts. Part of the problem, George, as you know, is the debt is on balance sheet, but a tremendous amount of the assets are off balance sheet. Mm-hmm. Because, in fact, if you look at what you cover throughout the year, you're talking about all those assets that are flying around to their building that are off balance sheet. So you've been following the off-balance sheet money for years. I suspect if we could put all of the assets that have been paid for by that debt and built, you know, or around, the balance sheet might look pretty healthy, George.
You can track Catherine Solari, SOLARI.com. Thanks, Catherine. Tens of thousands of homes are without power, and there is renewed travel disruption after hurricane-force winds battered the United Kingdom. They are in bad shape there, but not nearly as bad as we will all be if we get hit by an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, or an X-flare from the sun. Our campaign to insulate the power grid officially started today in conjunction with WND.com, WorldNet Daily. And, of course, two very important people who have been running the flag for all of us, and that's Bill Forstgen, who wrote One Second After, and, of course, Michael Maloof, author of A Nation Forsaken. And, Michael, the campaign is underway. I'm glad and proud, and let's hope we can get this done, huh?
No, yeah, I appreciate you having me on. I agree with you. We ran a major story this evening and announcing the campaign, and I think that it's going to be important for the work that you're doing to get that legislation passed in the next Congress next year. It's too late for this year, but we need to have to get public support to push legislators to get a federal response to this potential vulnerability, and it can be fixed. That's the insidious part of all this. It can be fixed, and for about $2 billion at most, it can be done, but it's going to take time, and even if we were to start tomorrow, it'll take at least 5 years to get utilities to harden their grid and utilities so that we can be protected either from a natural or man-made EMP event.
And I have found, Michael, at least my experience has been, if we keep at it on this story, the legislators are going to really realize, oh, my gosh, we're being watched now, not just by some media folks, but by our constituents. I think they're going to do something.
Well, yeah, I think they will, but I think it's going to take persistent public pressure to get them to respond. And we're being faced with not only other issues, but other vulnerabilities, and we're having to address those. But this is a vulnerability to this country that we can fix and do it now, because if we don't fix it, it's going to be absolutely devastating and catastrophic for everybody. We're talking maybe up to 90% of the population.
All right, let's stay on it. Michael Maloof out there writes for WND.com, and, of course, his book, A Nation Forsaken, EMP, the escalating threat of an American catastrophe. I pledge this to you. We will not stop unless we get this done. I don't care how long it takes. And let's hope that we beat an EMP or a solar flare and get this done before that. Now, as I just mentioned, the situation in Toledo where they say the drinking ban of the tap water is back is okay now. The ban's been lifted. But I'm not sure I drink the water quite yet. No, not at all. As a matter of fact, bottled water for me and for my family if I were living in the greater Toledo area. In a moment, we're going to be talking about this situation. Can it happen to you wherever you may live? And then how do you fix it? That'll be next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Cody Yeager-Kozacek studied journalism and biology as an undergraduate at West Virginia University and graduated summa cum laude from the University of Parley Isaac Reed School of Journalism. She's done research at the College of the Bahamas, the Jarrus Research Center on the San Salvador Island in the Bahamas. Her interests, of course, include food security and ecology. She co-writes The Stream, Circle of Blue's daily digest of international water news trends. We're turning to her this hour to talk about this bizarre situation in Toledo, Ohio, where some algae got into Lake Erie, and that's where they tap into their drinking water, and they couldn't drink it. And that was a lot of people, over 400,000. Cody, what an unbelievable story, and welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you are, of course, at KHVH, our great affiliate, 830 on the AM dial in Honolulu.
Great.
Great area out there. But when you first heard about this, Cody, what did you think?
I was surprised in a way, but not really, because I had been down in Toledo last fall with Circle of Blue working on a research project about this very issue and talked with water managers then. And this was kind of the worst case scenario that they could think of. And that was back in October last year when right after another town nearby Toledo, a much smaller town, had to shut down their water treatment plant. So because of the same problem. So this was a worst case scenario that they were worried about. And then, you know, now it has come to fruition. So it was kind of a surprise, but not really.
Even if Lake Erie had all this tainted toxic algae, I would have thought that the Toledo water system would have been able to clean it and contain it and disinfect it. Why didn't that work?
Right. And typically they are. And that's what's a little bit interesting about this situation is that the algal bloom in Lake Erie right now and the toxin levels in the lake are not, I mean, they're high and the bloom is large, but it's not as large as it has been past summers. And the toxin levels are not out of the ordinary for this time of year. They've dealt with this sort of thing before. So it's really, there's been speculation that possibly one of the storms that went through the area mixed the algae down. Usually it floats on top. It might have mixed it down to where the water intakes are, and more could have gotten in that way. And really, they don't know yet how that happened, and they might not figure that out. So that's still being investigated.
So, Cody, if on Sunday they told you there's a water ban, don't drink the water, don't brush your teeth with it, don't do anything, and then on Monday they said, that's okay now, would you? Would you drink from your tap?
Well, it's interesting because they're basing that, they lifted the advisory based on tests done by the Environmental Protection Agency they were testing the water in Toledo at the Toledo water plant, but then they wanted to send extra samples down to an EPA lab down in Cincinnati where they had more equipment that could, you know, do a more accurate test. And they've been a little bit slow about getting those EPA results out to people. They basically said that it's below the World Health Organization's limit of one part per billion, which is the safe limit. And so that's what they based that decision on. And the governor, of course, was shown drinking the water. And for people that are concerned, they can flush their systems, their water system, just by running. The Toledo Lucas County Health Department has instructions about how to do that on their website. But really, I talked to water managers at a very nearby plant in Oregon, Ohio, and their test results, they never shut down their water, but they were seeing toxin levels in Lake Erie were declining. On Saturday, they were maybe 10 to 20 parts per billion, or that was last week, which is way high, but of course then in the treated water, it was probably much lower, but still above that one part per billion. And now today in Oregon and some of the other areas, the Lake Erie water was about 8 parts per billion was the highest. But then once it was treated with all the chemicals, it was down below even detectable levels, which is 0.3 parts per billion. So well below the safe level. But that was at the other nearby water plants. The test results from Toledo's water plant have not come out yet.
And then, of course, we're told that the cause could have been, of course, a lot of runoff from what farmers have been doing and the chemicals they've been using. Is that the possibility?
Right. Well, there's been a lot of research into the issue in the Great Lakes region, and I think it's a growing issue because of these blooms getting larger. There was a record bloom in 2011 that was almost 2,000 square miles at its peak. So really big blooms, a really big problem. And basically, yeah, researchers are kind of pointing at agriculture and saying that changing farming practices, changing the time of fertilizer application, and just even some conservation practices that we were telling farmers to do in the 80s and 90s could possibly be contributing. There's a lot of study going on if that's the case, because phosphorus is a nutrient that can run off the land and get into the water, and it feeds the algae.
They love that stuff.
Yep. So that's the primary cause, and that can come from sewage as well. So the algal blooms were a big problem in the 1960s, and then the federal government passed some laws, including the Clean Water Act, that addressed the pollution, the phosphorus coming from city sewer plants and that sort of thing. So that has declined, but the other, right now they're seeing a different type of phosphorus become more prevalent, and it's called dissolved reactive phosphorus, and that's basically a type that's 100% available for algae to use, and that's what they figure is running off of farm fields, and that's what's being studied right now.
We're with journalist Cody Yeager-Kosachek, and we are talking about the situation in Toledo. Now, what are the possibilities, Cody, that this could happen all over the country?
Well, I mean, to happen, Microcystin itself is pretty much a Lake Erie thing right now, but cyanobacteria, it's a type of cyanobacteria or blue-green algae, and that can grow in any freshwater body. It has been in inland lakes, both in Ohio and elsewhere, and there's had to been beach advisories or where people can't go in the water because the toxin, if it touches the skin, it can cause rashes or burns. If you ingest it, it can cause nausea, vomiting, and liver damage. So you don't want to come in contact with it. And basically, it could feasibly happen other places, but typically water treatment plants are able to treat it. And the severity of the blooms is really kind of a Lake Erie thing right now. But yeah, phosphorus pollution is an issue in a lot of different freshwater bodies, not only in the United States, but around the world.
Cody, what do you think of bottled water that is, let's say, filtered and it's in these plastic bottles? Okay to drink?
I guess it depends what the source is. I would think that would probably be fine.
And, you know, when they talk about spring water, okay?
Yeah, I it's not really my area of expertise, but I guess you'd probably have to look at where it was bottled from.
So when you write with the Stream, tell me a little bit about the Stream.
Yeah, it's just a daily news digest of top stories regarding water from around the world. So typically about 5 or 6 stories that we feel showcase the trends that are happening in fresh water around the world.
How big is this Toledo story now?
This has been pretty big. It's something that a lot of people are concerned about, and a lot of, you know, it's been a growing problem, and so it's kind of just focused attention on a problem that has in many ways kind of gotten not looked at as intensely as maybe it should be, but you know, it's people are getting more aware, and they're hopefully going to address it.
Cody, the big problem here in California is not just the possibility of algae in water, but having water at all.
Right.
I mean, there's drought conditions. We've had a deluge the last few days, but that's not nearly enough. The entire region, including, you know, Las Vegas, California, all these areas are in serious trouble. Mm-hmm. What can they do?
Well, I guess that would be a better question for my colleague, Brett Walton, who has covered Western United States water situation really extensively. You can find that on our website as well. But I think it's basically just a matter of conservation and really taking a hard look at how we're allocating water between different users as far as agricultural interests, energy production, and obviously populations. And we might not be able to use water in the same way that we have been for the past century. You know, if it's a 21st century, we got to kind of think about things a little bit differently.
People may have to change. I mean, in the Midwest, in most of those areas, St. Louis, for example, they have more water than they know what to do with right now.
Right. Yep.
And then we have these other regions that are just starving for it. So not a good situation. Do you think, what's your gut tell you about the possibility that wars and battles could be fought over fresh drinking water?
Well, we've reported a little bit about that, and that's definitely an issue. Some higher up, you know, security councils have identified that as a possibility. You know, water is being a starter of future conflicts, but Actually, people that I've spoken with have also expressed a lot of hope about people coming together over water issues and working together as because basically everyone needs it, and so you have to find a solution, and so it's also a good way for people to work together.
All right, we're going to take phone calls with you next, Cody. And those of you who might be listening on our Toledo affiliate, WSPD 1370 AM, please check in with us. Tell us what it's been like for you. My gosh. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. Listen to these statistics. More than 250 million people in the United States depend on fresh water from lakes and rivers for drinking water. Now, that pales by comparison around the world. 783 million people do not have access to clean water around the world. Cody, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's definitely a big issue.
What are these people going to do? No water. You can't go much longer than a few days without water.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, people are getting water somehow, but a lot of the times it's not necessarily from a piped source like you and I would, you know, not a faucet or something. And it's not always, you know, it's not treated or, you know, that's one of the UN development goals is trying to get drinking water and sanitation to everyone. So they're working on it and making progress, I believe. But yeah, it's still definitely a big problem.
Cody Kozacek with us. She writes, of course, for The Stream, which is a digest of international water news issues. So we're getting a lot of calls and some from Toledo. So let's go to the Toledo callers first. Chris is with us. Oh, boy, is the nightmare over, Chris?
It appears that it might be over for right now. They gave us the all clear today that we can drink the water, but I'm not going to touch it for a few days here. They told us to run the faucets for about 15 to 20 minutes to clear them out. And I'm still hearing stories of people that they're getting rashes on their skin, and people that are having upset stomachs and diarrhea. And it doesn't seem like they're being very forthcoming with answers through all the little press conferences that they were giving. The big problem that people had here in the city is they weren't giving any answers. They just repeatedly told us that they're waiting on test results from here and there, and sent test results to Columbus, to Cleveland, Cincinnati, wherever they're getting their test results from. It's taking forever to get back, and people were getting really stressed out about it because, you know, you have a lot of mothers here in town that don't have access to water for their babies,
That's
for
right.
formula, and people were selling, it's a smaller store, selling cases of water for $25.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and, you know, in a good store, you might find it for $15. You know, now here the Attorney General is going to start investigating for price gouging, but we're supposed to pull together in times like this. And, you know, really the big thing for me, though, it was a big wake-up call. When I woke up Saturday morning, I got a phone call from my roommate, and it kind of scared me. He said, "Don't drink the water. Don't touch the water. Don't do any else. What in the heck is going on here?" I turned the news on, and I think, it's a wake-up call because, you know, in case of an EMP attack ever on this country, I mean, this is how it's going to be for the whole United States.
That's what we've been warning people, Chris, for a long, long time. Would a high-powered filtration system, Cody, work if individuals had them for their homes?
Well, I'm really not sure about that, but I do know that as far as the municipal water treatment plants, they typically are treating the microcystin with a combination of chemicals, activated carbon, and others that will kind of take the toxin out of the water, and they do that along the route that the water takes from. It starts, the intakes are about 3 miles out into Lake Erie, and then as it comes in, they're treating it at different points and testing it at different points. And their budget for those chemicals has about doubled since 2010 in Toledo. So, there's definitely, but I've also been told that there can be a point where obviously they can't take it all out. So as far as individual homes having more advanced treatment systems, I really don't know of any that are available right now. And obviously boiling it is not good. That only concentrates it. So I can't really speak to that.
All right, let's go to Melanie in Toledo, Ohio. Hi, Mel. How's it going out there for you?
I am actually doing very well, considering the last weekend worth of no water use.
Oh, I mean, how'd you get by? What'd you do without any water?
Well, actually, I'm a longtime listener.
You're ready. You were prepared.
And I also live in an all-electric apartment. So I always keep water on hand.
Good.
Usually I'll refill 2-liter bottles of pop when they're empty just to have on-hand stuff in case power outages and stuff like that.
I mean, could you even take showers with that water?
They told us not to. Sunday they told us that healthy adults could take showers, but they warned that anybody that had any type of skin issues, that type of thing, should still stay away from it. They gave us the okay for it this morning around 9 a.m.
Was there any odor, or did you see anything coming out of the taps?
It didn't look any different than they normally do. I mean, we still use the toilets to flush the toilets, and there's no foul out odors coming through from there, so... But I'm still using bottled water compared to using it out of the tap.
Yeah, at what point, Mel, are you going to go back and use the tap?
Probably about 2 weeks.
You're going to wait that long? Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe that's safer. And, you're lucky you can hold out that long. I mean, some people, Cody, can't. That's the other issue. Some people have to use it. You know, when they said you can use the water, I bet a lot of people had to use it.
Right. I mean, that's definitely a problem. But, you know, at the same time, it's obviously people's own choice to decide when to use their water and if they have that choice. But I guess I would feel that the city of Toledo also, it's in their best interest to avoid a public health crisis any further than it's already been. So in that sense, I can see why people are hesitant to use the water again. But I do think they are testing the water, and that it would be really nice if they would be a little bit more forthcoming with the results. But in other areas right around there where they have been more forthcoming with the results, it is below the detectable levels that they're seeing with their tests. So
how'd you turn your journalism degree into specializing about water? How'd that happen for you?
Well, I've always been interested in writing about science, and so I actually grew up in Michigan, and Circle of Blue, where I write, is based there, and they write about science of water all over the world, so it was a kind of a good fit.
Good for you. I grew up in Michigan, too. Whereabouts for you?
But Traverse City area.
I know it well. That's the home of the former late governor, Bill Milliken, a long time ago. Probably before you were even born. Let's go to Tom in Greeley, Colorado, west of the Rockies. Tom, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Good evening to both of you.
You too.
So I heard just today about a product called the Slingshot Water Distiller Purification System.
What invented is that?
Well, it has nothing to do with a slingshot. That's just the name of it. Dean Kamen, the fellow who invented the Segway.
Oh, yeah,
Well, he invented this, and evidently it can purify up to 1,000 liters of water per day at the cost of about 6 cents per liter, 24 cents a gallon. It's a distiller. And the thing about it is it has a closed-loop heat system, so it uses very little energy to actually boil all that water, and boil, that is, to turn it into steam and then recondense it into drinkable water from any water source, salt water, really literally water right out of a sewer. And they cost about $2,000 each.
You know, for protection and for peace of mind, that's not bad.
No, and really, putting out 1,000 liters per day is probably more than the average household would need.
Take care of the whole neighborhood. Maybe you can go in halves or get a number of people to do it, and have it at a central place,
But, you know, that that person will be responsible for it, but everybody, you know, chips in.
Yeah, so Corey, had you heard anything about that invention?
No, that actually, that sounds very interesting. I haven't heard about that one in particular, but we do get a lot of information. We've actually been working on a story for a while about there's all sorts of inventions and people trying to solve, you know, the water crisis, and that they're trying to figure out ways to do that, and that's cost-effective and, you know, something easily available materials, and especially for use in disaster areas or in some of the less developed countries that are, you know, needing these sorts of things. And, you know, I've heard of billboards in Chile that they've been, you know, retrofitting to be able to take water out of the air, since it's so to help combat droughts and that sort of thing. So yeah, there's a lot out there that people are trying to solve ways to purify water and to get more water. But no, I hadn't heard of that one in particular.
Cody Kozacek with us. Cody, what do you see, what does your organization see as the biggest water issue out there today?
Well, there's quite a few, but right now, basically what we've focused on, we've actually done a series of stories in the United States and in China and in India, called our Choke Point series, which basically examines as water is becoming more scarce due to, you know, population growth or just using more resources to produce our products or that sort of thing, we're seeing more competition between users in agriculture, energy, and you know, municipalities. So all those three things kind of combine to make some interesting stories around the world where, you know, we're trying to figure out how to balance those things, if it's possible in certain areas, or if people are going to have to make choices. And I think we're really at a point where, you know, what our reporting has found, where people really are starting to have to think about water in a different way mm-hmm. than they have before, when there were less of us on the planet and when there were, you know, we weren't consuming as many things or that sort of thing.
And, you know, and this could very well be a wake-up call in the Toledo area for a lot of people as well. Let's go to Myrna in Minot, North Dakota, east of the Rockies. Hello, Myrna. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes. Good evening.
Hi.
To both of you, thank you for taking my call.
You too.
My husband and I had a spring water business, and the spring came right out of the ground. And we had that for 21 years, and then we sold the business, and whoever, the fellow that bought the business decided, I don't know for what reason, but then he decided to change matters, and he was taking city water with all of the contaminants and using it, doing it reverse osmosis. What do you think about that, Cody?
About reverse osmosis
mm-hmm.
for recycling
yes.
water?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, there's been Singapore has started a whole water business about recycling water. It works on a large scale. And I guess it depends where, if you want your spring water from spring water, that's your choice as well. But as far as, I think that's definitely going to become more prevalent in the future, is people recycling water, and especially using water, or not necessarily making all of our water potable. So the water that you would water your lawn with might, you know, wouldn't be up to drinking water standards, which right now in a lot of places it is. So, you know, treating water to different levels for different uses, and obviously for drinking water, it'd be the highest, but.
Okay, let's take one or two more calls. That's all we will have time for. We have Chuck in Anthrop, Ohio. Thanks for calling, Chuck. Go ahead.
Hey, George.
Hi.
I'd like to say hi to TJ out there. Hey, I want to refresh everybody's memory in this area about, I'm on the tributary, Maumee, a large feed that goes to Lake Erie, and there's a lot of creeks that feed that, but looking at the farming side, they have just within the last 10, 15 years allowed these huge factory farms to come in. And our soil here is clay. there's not a lot of biological breakdown in clay. We've got very little topsoil. But the waste of all these animals gets spread over these fields that boundary on these creeks and stuff that feed and go to the Maumee River. But anyway, years ago, there was a project during Clinton administration called the Maumee River Heritage Project. And at this time, they had maps set up and marking the boundaries of these creeks in the Maumee, and the UN wanted to criminalize the farmers that used chemicals at that time.
Jeez.
But I would say these dissolved solids from these factory farms are a far greater threat.
Yes.
Because these, the algae, actually, if you go back to the creeks that are right beside these farms, that bad algae starts there.
Well, that's a good point. No, you're right on. And it does. Now, though this algae, Cody, is seasonal, this has probably been as bad as it gets. And, I don't know. What do you do about that? I'm not a water purifying expert, but I mean, can they purify the entire lake? It's too big.
Right. I mean, you bring up several good points. The farming, I mean, I talk to farmers as well, and a lot of them are, they say that we don't want to waste our fertilizer either. We don't want to just be spreading it uselessly and having it run off. And so there's actually been a huge increase in agricultural technology in the past decade or so that has increased the precision which farmers can apply it with, and a lot of them are doing so. And at the same time, researchers who look at this problem are saying that it might not even be a very big percentage that's actually coming off the fields, but cumulatively over such a large area, it can create a problem. And then you also brought up the factory farms. As far as the confined animal feeding operations, those are a big deal, and they are supposed to be permitted under the Clean Water Act, but basically they have to come up with nutrient management plans, and those aren't necessarily, it's a little bit unclear about how often those are actually inspected and how many times anyone goes out to look at if those are being followed and that sort of thing. There's a number of voluntary programs that farmers can, apply for, and a lot of them do, to try to, adhere to best management practices. And I think that gets to you can't purify the whole lake or the whole river. It really goes into stopping the pollutants before they get in a certain area, and that can be, planting these big buffer strips across the land to trap things before they get into the water, or planting what they call cover crops, which are basically making sure you don't ever see any bare farm fields. There's always plants holding in that phosphorus and those other nutrients. And then also just, there's not really a lot of data on how many of those best management practices have been implemented. I think the USDA is starting to do that slowly, but there's a lot we don't know about how much of that has been adopted.
All right, Cody, thank you so much for shedding some light for us on this Toledo episode and water as well. Circleofblue.org is Cody's website, by the way. I'll be back in a moment with John Hogue as we begin our program on prophecy.